welcome to another episode of Soundography, a crash course in music one band at a time. My name is Brian Ibbett.
And I am Hammond Chamberlain.
And we are going to the South, the Dirty South today, for today's episode of Soundography, for today's artist that we're featuring, to the Bayou, right? To New Orleans, Nolens. Oh, I can't say New Orleans, Nolens. Dr. John is who we're going to be talking about on today's episode.
It seems fitting after yesterday's football game
to put this in time. Oh, too soon. I think, you know, by the time this one airs, a lot of water will have passed under the bridge, out of the bayou.
Under the Lake Pontchartrain Bridge.
The Pontchartrain Bridge. A lot of water will have passed under the Pontchartrain Bridge, and so hopefully it won't be such a sore subject. But, yeah, boy. Sad state of affairs there with the game yesterday from all accounts on the internet. But one person who probably, you know, doesn't care is Dr. John, who this is me saying right here. I knew maybe three or four songs by Dr. John before this. And I think I confused Dr. John a lot with Leon Russell. And I don't know why, because I think of Leon Russell. He's not from Nolens, is he? I don't think he's from Nolens. He's from Oklahoma. No, he's but there for a while they were both wearing the top hat and musical style was maybe similar. I don't know.
So are you saying that everyone who wears a top hat, you're gonna get confused? So Slash, you got confused with
Slash. Yeah, isn't Slash the same guy as Dr. John? Isn't his full name Dr. John Slash?
and that the shadow guy from, I guess that kind of fits though, because it's set in New Orleans.
You're talking about Scaramanga? Not Scaramanga, that was the man with the golden gun. Jeffrey Holder from Live and Let Die.
Well, there's that, but I was also thinking about the Disney movie with the Frog Princess, and it's set there.
Oh yeah. Okay. Well, yeah. And also another character that wears a top hat and is from New Orleans and is voodoo.
Yep.
Connected to voodoo. Yep. I did not know about the voodoo connection with Dr. John, but you get that stuff like right away when you start listening to his music. Mm-hmm. It is, right at the very first song.
Yeah. Yeah. I knew a little bit about it. I saw him in concert in the early 2000s at the House of Blues in New Orleans.
Really?
Yeah.
I didn't know this. And all this talk about Dr. John, I thought you were coming to this as green as I was.
I'm still pretty green. My brother-in-law is a huge Dr. John fan.
Huh.
And we went, a guy named Coco Robichaud. Oh, was his opening an act. And he puts on a heck of a show. I mean, I had a great time. It was super impressive, but I didn't know any more about his music identifiably before I walked in than I did when I walked out. Mm-hmm. I recognized the songs I recognized. I knew the songs I knew. I did not absorb anything new into my soul as I was sitting there listening. I just knew I had a good time at the concert.
Very cool. Well, good. Well, that's good. And you've already got a leg up on the Stairway to Heaven song then, because you've heard him in concert. Uh-huh. You know what songs he might have done. I think we all do. I think everybody listening to the show is probably saying, yeah, here's the song that's going to be. we'll get to that later in the show. Let's go ahead and get into the history and discography of Dr. John, whose real name is Malcolm John Rebenack. He was born in 1941, of course, from New Orleans. He didn't have any formal musical training until he was a teen. And not only was he in choir for a short time, let me rephrase that. He didn't have any formal musical training until he was a teen, and he was only in choir for a short time before he actually got kicked out. He's known for combining blues, pop, jazz, and rock into his music. And of course, having a very Cajun flavored, he's Cajun flavor music.
He did the musical stuff for Popeyes ad campaign.
Oh, really? For the Popeyes chicken franchise?
Yeah. So
that's cool.
Yeah, we're leading all into the stereotypes, but
we kind of are. Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. So the thing that I wanted to add is that frequently they use the phrase boogie woogie when they describe some of the other influences. Now I have a hard time saying that without giggling.
Sure.
So I didn't put it in the notes as frequently as I probably should have. But anytime there's a list of musical styles,
yeah,
dear listener, add boogie woogie and giggle if you so prefer.
I would love to do an entire episode on Boogie Woogie because Jules Holland, who we talked about during the Squeeze episode, he was the piano player for Squeeze. He released so many Boogie Woogie albums, and it's that left hand is going dun da 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 dun da 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 dun da 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 dun da da on the piano, and the right hand is going.
I really wish though that it had a different name that I could take more seriously.
Right, instead of Boogie Woogie, I bet there is, but dang, it's just Boogie Woogie. It's not even just Boogie. Boogie solo. Just Boogie is a whole different thing, and hope you've got a Kleenex handy, but Boogie Woogie is something special for sure. His father exposed him to jazz music early, and it reflected in his entire career, and most notably in his album Skedaddydat. He started as a guitar player before performing in New Orleans clubs, and when he was 13, he met Professor Longhair. Dr. John, Professor Longhair. I'm guessing neither of these guys are formally trained in order to get their honorifics. He was flamboyant and had a striking style. This is when he began his life as a professional musician. At 16, he was hired to work as a producer at Ace Records. This gave him experience working with a wide variety of musicians. He left school to focus on music. In the 1950s, he was a session musician, and he had a regional hit with a Bo Diddley-influenced instrumental called Storm Warning.
So it's funny, we talk about his flamboyant style, yeah. And we've talked about, as the lead-in last week, that he inspired the Dr. Teeth character in The Muppets.
Right, right.
Which, yes. After listening to him again this week, they're not even hiding it. It's Dr. Teeth.
Right. No vocal changes. Like Dr. Teeth is like, all right, animal, we're going to play some Boogie Woogie.
Yeah.
If you bang on the drums.
But the other thing
is, get that saxophone.
The other thing is, I've wondered, I've recently kind of gotten back into going into other flamboyant artists, other histories and music. And we'll talk about that later on in the season. But there's a guy named Arthur Brown. Okay. Do you know who Arthur Brown is?
I don't know. Not by name.
He did a song called Fire. And it's the, I am the God of Hellfire and I bring you fire. That one.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah.
He's also super flamboyant and influenced literally hundreds of vocalists around the world. Most notably the British ones, like the early British heavy metal guys. For whatever reason, I'm wondering if Dr. John knew anything about Arthur Brown.
I don't know. I have no idea, but I had no idea that was so low, because they sampled that in a whole bunch of other things. Oh, yeah, don't they?
Yeah. Came out in 1968, just so you know.
Wow. Okay. No idea. I'm going to look that up.
That might come up later in the season, just so you know.
Oh, really? Interesting. Okay.
Big tease.
His career as a guitar player was cut short by a gunshot that injured one of his fingers. He did try playing bass, but he started paying more attention to piano, which you think would be just as difficult with a finger injury.
Depends on which finger. I mean, Tony Iommi cut off one of his fingers and pretty much, and it helped him become a better guitar player. I mean,
well, and Jerry Garcia was missing a finger, but you would think that piano, especially the intricacies of Boogie Woogie piano, you would think would require 10 fingers.
We're going to start a Boogie Woogie drinking game for this episode for you.
Well, it's better than a Nolans drinking game. Like how many times I say Nolans. He was sentenced to prison for 2 years for drug charges. When he was released, he moved to Los Angeles. And once he was there, he quickly became a go-to session musician in the studio scene. He was part of the Wrecking Crew, and he recorded with Sonny and Cher, Canned Heat, and, of course, Frank Zappa.
So have you seen the documentary, The Wrecking Crew?
I have, yeah. And I don't remember them mentioning Dr. John, but, man, there were some great talents in there in that documentary and all the stuff that they were involved in.
Yeah, and Canned Heat did that Rolling and Tumbling and On the Road Again.
Right.
Also blues again. Influenced, so fit right in.
It feels like, you know, you're listening to a set of classic rock on a radio station. If they play Canned Heat, a Dr. John song fits right in perfectly. Mm-hmm. Afterwards.
Yep.
It's that funk style. His interest in voodoo helped him perfect his persona as Dr. John. His stage show is lively, theatrical, and inspired by Mardi Gras and medicine shows. And initially started out as Dr. John, the Night Tripper.
I'm glad he dropped the last part.
Yeah, the Night Tripper. You can just hear him saying it. In 1968, he released the album Gris Gris, which combined voodoo rhythms and New Orleans tradition. And, you know, this is the first thing, obviously, that we listened to this week. I love the fact that the first lyric of the first song on the first album is "They call me Dr. John." I mean, it really just sets the stage for his entire library moving forward.
Yeah.
It's so cool. And I'm trying to think, are there any other musicians who began the first song on the first album introducing themselves?
I'm wondering, I bet you with somewhat surety that probably some hip hop artists did.
Oh, sure.
In the early 80s.
Yeah, I'll bet you're right. I know that Kid Rock began one song with "My name is Kid," but
that wasn't his, that wasn't his first album.
No, that definitely wasn't. That wasn't right. That wasn't even his first hit single. So it was a few songs in, but you know, just basically, "Hey, I'm Dr. John. Here's my album." Gris Gris was ranked 143rd on Billboard's 500 greatest albums of all time. He followed that album up with Babylon, which also came out in 1968, you know, back when people put out albums, multiple albums a year. From his autobiography, he says, "Our second album was cut in late 1968, the year of the Tet Offensive and the assassinations of Bobby Kennedy and Martin Luther King Jr. It was a heavy time for me. Not only was the Vietnam War raging all its insanity, but as a semi-outlaw, I was being pursued by various kinds of heat across L.A. In its lyrics and music, this album reflects those chaotic days. At times, hard driving, at other times, following a deliberately spacey, disorienting groove, Babylon was the band's attempt to say something about the times and to do it with a few unusual musical time signatures. The lead song, Babylon, sets the tone to a three-quarter and ten-quarter groove. It lays out my own sick-ass view of the world then, namely, that I felt our number was up. We were trying to get into something with visions of the end of the world, as if Hieronymus Bosch had cut an album. I don't care whatever you think now. I'm gonna bring my wrath down on you now. So you feel the weight of truth now. Well said. That was an interesting album because it definitely didn't, it wasn't as much the voodoo stuff as much as it felt like trying to send a message. And I think one of the songs even has a bunch of kids, young kids chanting about guns or something, if I remember correctly. Uh-huh.
Yeah. Well, it's also, this album also felt more inspired by psychedelia and not the blues and funk and all that stuff.
Yeah, definitely. In 1969, he played with Eric Clapton on three tracks from music from Free Creek. In 1970, he released the album Remedies. And about that, he said, "My managers put me in a psych ward. These guys were very bad people. I'd gotten busted on a deal and they got me bonded out of jail. And so when they did, I could have gotten a parole violation. All of this stuff was so unconnected to music that it's hard to relate it. A friend of mine had just come out of doing 40-something years in Angola, the famous Louisiana State Penitentiary. He was just someone special in my heart called Tangalai. And Tangalai says, 'I'm going to sell you this song. Got in Angola, but ain't nobody ever cut this song. Even now, guys I know getting out of Angola know this song. It's still a horrible place to be.'"
So there was a documentary that came out a few years ago about Angola. And there is no other place on the planet that would look like hell on earth if I were going to prison.
Right. Yeah, I can't even imagine. I don't know much about Angola. I do know it's bad. But
And I can tell you that I picked this song because it is Dr. John's epic.
Wow. All right. I can't wait to, I have to go back and listen to it. I listened to everything, but I need to go back and hear this one.
Do we want to talk a little bit about that for a second?
Sure.
The effect of listening to a lot of Dr. John?
Yes, let's talk about that, because here's the thing that was a little bit frustrating with it, with his music, is that, sure, he's got live albums, he's got compilation albums, but he's also got a lot of songs that are repeated on multiple regular studio albums. Like, I can't count how many albums had Tipitina on it, or Bald Man, or Bald Head, or whatever it is. But it wasn't like a compilation album, it was a studio album, and so it just felt like, all right, why are we hearing this one again? Is that one of the things that you noticed?
That was one of the things. The other thing was that he pulls all these influences in, and he has very much his own style. But album to album, that style transitions very little. So as you're going through, moving from song to song and moving from album to album, sometimes it's a little bit indiscernible, which made me think that Dr. John's great to add spice and a little flavor to your playlist if you're shuffling, mm-hmm. but sitting down and just going, pounding through it all, I would not recommend, because you will miss out on some of the things that are actually really cool that he does.
Yeah, I agree. It's he's great at the things he does. And I wouldn't even say he's great at the one thing he does, because his stuff is, you know, there is a lot of variety to it. And I think maybe that is what you miss. Mm-hmm. I think that's what you're saying.
Yeah.
That you miss out a lot of that variety if you power through and listen to a ton of it together. I would say, you know, do two or three albums at a time if you're planning on listening to some Dr. John. And I think you should. I recommend it.
I think he's great.
Yeah. I enjoyed this week a lot more than I expected to like it. I do like 70s music and you know, late 60s music. I wasn't familiar with a lot of his stuff. So obviously going through this stuff was like, all right, I kind of get this funk groove that I, you know, you don't hear these days from 70s music. But yeah, I totally get that.
Yeah.
In 1971, he released the album The Sun, Moon, and Herbs. Eric Clapton and Mick Jagger played on this album, another connection to Eric Clapton. This served as a transition from his Night Tripper era to one more aligned with New Orleans funk and R&B.
Yeah, he started kind of shedding more of the voodoo qualities and started integrating more of the kind of the traditional party atmospheres of New Orleans.
Yeah, which I really liked, kind of the Mardi Gras, mm-hmm. more of the Mardi Gras stuff. Yeah. So
colorful.
Less of the underbelly, the seedy, scary side, and more of the stuff everybody knows. 1972, he released Dr. John's Gumbo. This was a landmark album for him and one of his most popular. I really loved it from start to finish. It's a lot of covers, obviously. So that's one thing that makes me like it, but it's still a very enjoyable, solid album. The lead single was Iko Iko, and it broke into the Billboard Top 100. A cover of a song by James Sugarboy Crawford. They either know Dr. John's version or they know a version by the Bell Stars, a girl group from the 80s that I think the version that you hear at the beginning of Rain Man as Tom Cruise, before you even see Dustin Hoffman, you see Tom Cruise driving by a bunch of windmills. Mm-hmm. And this is the song that plays kind of to set up the kind of character that Tom Cruise is at the beginning of that movie.
Also, the Chipmunks did a killer cover of it, too.
Did they really?
Yeah.
That doesn't surprise me, actually. Love it. Let's see. Rolling Stone listed this album as 404 on the top 500 greatest albums of all time.
Guess that means we can't find it.
There you go. That's why I paused. I knew that was coming. And he has stated that it was around this time that he changed his live show image to reflect Mardi Gras and less of the voodoo influences.
More beads and less blood.
Right. Plus, you know, if you want the ladies in the front row to lift their shirts up for beads, it's way easier to do that than with the voodoo doll.
Yes.
I'm just saying. Mm-hmm. Yes. In 1973, he released the album In the Right Place. This established him as one of the main ambassadors of New Orleans funk. In describing the album, Dr. John says the album had more of a straight ahead dance feel than ones I had done in the past, although still anchored solid in R&B. The album reached number 24 on the album charts, and Right Place, Wrong Time reached number 9 on the singles charts.
Bob Dylan, Bette Midler, and Doug Sham all contributed single lines to the lyrics. This list several instances of bad luck and failure.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, right, because it's,
about right, the wrong, right, like, place, wrong time.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Makes sense. This huge single. We'll talk a bunch about that later. Yeah. In 1974, he released an album called Decisively Bonnaroo. He tried to capitalize on the success of the last album, and although it's got the same feel, this album did not do as well. It did produce the single Everybody Want to Get Rich Right Away, which peaked at number 92 on the Billboard Hot 100. And Cut Me While I'm Hot, which was a collection of his session work, was also released in 1975. I think this was some of the stuff he did with Ace, if I remember correctly.
Okay. So the Bonnaroo, I think the concert series actually pulled part of that name from this album, if I'm not mistaken, from what I read.
Oh, it totally makes sense. That seems like a phrase I've never heard of the phrase Bonnaroo except with the music festival. And I was wondering, after hearing about this, after seeing his album, if it's like Giacomo and Ico Ico, and is a Cajun phrase, like if Bonnaroo comes from a Cajun phrase.
It might. That make a lot of sense.
Yeah, totally would. 1979, he released the album City Lights, and he started working with Doc Pomus, who is a Hall of Fame writer.
And this is a relationship that would stay together for the next 20 years or so, working together.
Yeah, and Doc Pomus, man, he's written so many things besides stuff for Dr. John. I'm just going to pull it up here because I know there's actually a really good tribute album where people covered, there it is right there. The album is called Till the Night Is Gone, a tribute to Doc Pomus. And it's covers of songs like Sweets for My Sweet by the Drifters, Save the Last Dance for Me, that was also the Drifters, Can't Get Used to Losing You, which the English beat, Can't Get Used to Losing You No Matter What I Try to Do. Lot of great, great stuff. Plus a song that I'm sure you'd like, Hammond, which was Boogie Woogie Country Girl. Oh, yeah, the song Viva Las Vegas that Elvis Presley made famous,
mm-hmm.
Partially written by Doc Pomus.
Could make sense. It has that feel to it.
Well, kind of. I mean, I think of Doc Pomus more as like a Southern New Orleans
but it's style got writer. That, but it's far more driving than a lot of other Elvis's songs do.
That's true. And you know what? Somebody might argue that that song is a perspective of Las Vegas from somebody who doesn't live in Las Vegas, right? Because it's going to set this town on fire and somebody, a tourist. It's written from the perspective of a tourist.
Yeah.
All right. And I love this album, by the way, City Lights. Again, there were no standout songs for me individually, but as a whole, the album is really, really good. If our playlist said, by the way, include an album, I might have included City Lights. 1979, he released Tango Palace. That was his last album with Horizon Records, which is a jazz label.
Neon Park did the artwork for it. And he's a famous painter who's done work for Zappa and Little Feat.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay. Did he do, and he did the album cover?
Yeah, he did the art for it. Yeah.
That's really cool. All right. 1981, he released Dr. John Plays Mac Rebinac, Volume 1.
So this is the first of two only pianos where he plays most of his own kind of boogie-woogie compilation or compositions.
Which is a clever way of doing it, right? Make it sound like you're doing a tribute album to somebody, but really you're the person you're paying tribute to, just your alter ego or your real
so name. So that'd be Garth Brooks sings Chris Gaines' greatest hits.
Right. Or no, wouldn't it be the other way around? Chris Gaines sings the songs of Garth Brooks.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
I like that. I really like that. Bob Dylan featuring the music of Robert Zimmerman. How cool is that? 1982, he released the album Loser for You, also known as Love Potion, followed that album with another Volume 2 of the Dr. John Plays Mac Rebinac, The Brightest Smile in Town. 1989, he released In a Sentimental Mood. We'll go through a lot of these albums because, as you heard us talk about earlier, listening to them all in succession, there's a lot of repetition and stuff like that.
And there weren't a lot of notes on each one. They just kind of were released and out there. And some of them had songs that hit the charts and others of them didn't. And that's kind of the way it goes.
Yep, totally. In a Sentimental Mood, by the way, though, 1989, a bunch of covers, a lot of standards. He does a duet on there with Ricky Lee Jones that we'll talk about a little bit later. But this album spent 11 weeks on the Billboard 200 charts, peaking at number 142 on July 8th, 1989. That same year, he released Zuzu Man. And in 1990 and 1991, he performed with the Bluesiana Triangle for a couple of albums. Followed that with 1992's Going Back to New Orleans, which another album that I felt was really, really solid. Then in 1993, he released the album Moe's Scotius, the anthology, is a 2-CD set collecting a lot of his works. Probably what we're going to link to on Amazon. Good. This would be, you know, if you're looking for like, all right, I want to get a good taste of Dr. John music, but I don't want to listen to his entire catalog. Boom. That's where you go to right there.
This is the front door to Dr. John land.
Yeah, totally is. 1994, he released Television a year later, Afterglow. And then a couple of years after that, in 1998, Anutha Zone. Oh, Another Zone. There's a lot of these where it's like I have to say it out loud, read it out loud before it's like, oh, yeah. What's Anutha? Is Anutha the name of a person? Is it the zone that he lives in? In 2000, he released the album Duke Elegant, which was a collection of songs written or performed originally by Duke Ellington, like a tribute album. 2001 brought us Creole Moon. 2004 brought us Nolans, Dis Dat, or Dutter. Dutter. I read ahead on that one. 2005, Sippin' in a Hurricane. And there's a place in New Orleans called Pat O'Brien's where they're famous for making hurricanes. And it shouldn't be food coloring. It should be...
Well, I don't know what it is because I don't drink, but...
Yeah, I know, but it's, it should be two kinds of rum. So your light rum, your dark rum, and then fruit juice. I can't remember what if it's orange or pineapple. Maybe it's both. And then grenadine to give it the red, like almost a cherry flavor and to turn it red. Problem with hurricanes is they're sweet, but the fruit drinks and the grenadine or the fruit mixers and the grenadine add so much flavor that you don't taste the alcohol. And by the time you've had your third one, the first one's power kicks in. And by then it's too late. You know, you're like, you're basically, oh, this hill isn't so bad. I'll just go ahead and slide down it on this this sheet of metal. And then by the time you get to the cliff, it's like, oh, all right, it's too late. I'm done. That's some of my favorite times in Nolans were started with Pat O'Brien's and a bunch of hurricanes and probably ended up somewhere after that. I have no idea, but that's where, help me out here. Who's the, Anne Rice, the Vampire Chronicles. Mm-hmm. Pat O'Brien's is a favorite place of hers as well.
I'm glad she didn't put that in Interview with the Vampire because that would have kind of diffused the whole mystery of the thing.
Right. Yeah. Interview with a Vampire. Oh, can we go to Pat O'Brien's for some hurricanes? Great. And it's a 12-page novel. I don't remember what happened during the interview. In 2005. Oh, I'm sorry. The Sippin' in a Hurricane, by the way, is a 4-song EP that was to benefit New Orleans Music Clinic, the Salvation Army, and the Jazz Foundation of America. Also that same year, released Shelter from the Storm, a concert for the Gulf Coast, of course, to raise money for relief from Hurricane Katrina. In 2006, Mercenary. You can see a tone, by the way, tone change here. Mm-hmm. 2008, City That Care Forgot. Like Kanye, he believes that George Bush didn't care about New Orleans. Curious George, A Very Monkey Christmas, music from the motion picture 2009.
Makes me feel like I need to see that now.
Kind of, yeah, right. I'm surprised that he hasn't done, or maybe he has and we don't know it, done voice work for a Disney film. Like for that Frog Princess movie, I would think that they would have had him do a voice of somebody, but I looked it up and didn't see him.
Yeah, I know he was in Blues Brothers 2000.
He was?
The classic Blues Brothers 2000.
Yes, everybody's, of all the Blues Brothers movies. in 2012, he released Lockdown. Dan Auerbach was featured on the album from the Black Keys. That album was listed number 12 on the top albums of 2012. 2014, Skedat Didat, The Spirit of Satch. Can you guess who this is a tribute album to?
Bonnie Raitt.
There you go. Exactly. Sasquatch. Lost sketch. No, it just doesn't work. Guests on the album include the Blind Boys of Alabama and Bonnie Raitt. Features many of the songs that Louis Armstrong recorded Inside Out and Upside Down, bringing them to 2014 with hip-hop beats, funk grooves and new horn arrangements. A very cool, refreshing take on a lot of those things.
Yeah, I actually, this is one of the albums that I thoroughly enjoyed. I was glad that it was the last one because it kind of was an eye opener and a stretch before the end.
A good bookend for sure. Cool. All right. Well, tell us some statistics and general notes about him.
So he's won 6 Grammys. He was inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame by John Legend in 2011, and he was given an honorary doctorate from Tulane in 2013. He appeared in The Last Waltz with the band that we talked about a couple seasons ago. Last season, a couple seasons. I don't even know, but we talked about the band. And then he was also, like I said, in Blues Brothers 2000, and he has been a judge on Top Chef.
On Top Chef?
Yeah.
Not on The Voice or American Idol or... That's kind of a bummer.
Yeah. He's done 6 live albums, and as I mentioned, I saw him in the House of Blues in New Orleans in the early 2000s. Let's just also just throw out there that he has a full-on grip of compilations and other appearances elsewhere. It's way too many to number. I could do a full hour on his compilations and other appearances. So if you're desperate, look him up. Mm-hmm. And then Dr. John has also done vocals for Popeye's Chicken. Like we said, that whole Love That Chicken jingle. That's him.
That chicken.
Yeah. And then the theme song from the TV show Blossom was also him.
Oh, right. I completely forgot about that. Yes.
In my opinion, nation, the sun is gonna surely shine. Stop all your fussing, slap on a smile. Come out and walk in the sun for a while. Don't fight your feelings. You know you wanna have a good time.
So God bless Blossom, who now is on
Big Bang Theory. Yeah, she's Amy Farrah Fowler.
Yep.
That theme song not done by Dr. John.
Nope, it's not.
The whole universe is in a dark, dank place. And then 40,000 years ago.
Now, is that your Dr. Teeth impersonation? Or your Dr.
It's kind
John?
Of both, isn't it? It's my Dr. Teeth impersonation of Dr. John. All right. Yeah, fine. I deserve that. All right. So one of us has seen him in concert, but this is the part of the show where we talk about his Stairway to Heaven songs. And what do we have as options here for this one?
So I made a list because I felt like we needed a list.
We did need a list. Yeah, we can't just go into it.
Yeah.
Singing.
So
it's obviously this.
Like Ico, Ico, Let the Good Times Roll, Lockdown. For some reason, I feel like he's done a lot of When the Saints Go Marching In, which would be a Louisiana Standard.
Oh yeah.
And right. Something I feel like he's done a lot, cause I felt like I heard a lot over the last week. Mm-hmm. But really, without any question, if it's not right place, wrong time, I will eat my microphone.
Exactly. Like if I think he even shows up on stage for other people performing and does right place, the wrong time. Like,
ladies and gentlemen, we're doing the tribute to Pink Floyd's The Wall, but first, exactly. Here's Dr. Hold John on, doing the right up. Place, wrong time.
I've been in the right place, but it must have been the wrong time. My head is in a bad place, but it has a good time. I've been running, trying to keep hung up in my mind. Just got to give myself a good talking to this time.
Yeah, like there you go right there. Right place, wrong time. 84 times performed in concert. I think it's got to be way more than that because I'm sure he's done more, but logged concerts in here. Such a Night is number 2. I Walk on Gilded Splinters. Ico Ico by the Dixie Cups. I don't think the Dixie Cups were the first ones. Like I said, I think it was whoever I mentioned a second ago, Sugar Man. Big Chief by Professor Longhair, his inspiration. Big Shot. And How Come My Dog Don't Bark When You Come Around?
So wait, Big Shot, like Billy Joel?
No, not the Billy Joel, No. One of his originals called Big Shot.
That would have been funny.
That would have been great. Yeah. Again, that would be a good fit and one for him to consider covering. I think that would be terrific.
I already picked my song for him to cover, but I feel like I need to do scenes from an Big Italian Shot. Restaurant again.
And there we go. Wave it, Brenda and Eddie. Goodbye. Popeyes. Blossom. All right. Let's the Blossom Show. All right. Now is the time we talk about who we'd like to hear them cover. I'll go first. And this is, I do like it when the cover I talk about is a song that we talked about on a previous episode of Soundography. The song is Dr. Jazz. This is a Squeeze song, but really it's a Jules Holland song. And I would not even be surprised if Jules had Dr. John as an inspiration when he wrote the song Dr. Jazz. But it is so Dr. John and Jules have worked together during one of Jules' Big Band Small World albums, did a cover of a song. Again, this is probably where I probably should have had that in front of me. But it's something like The Hand That Changed His Mind is the name of the song, which I think is an original Dr. John song. And it seems like this would be the perfect result of a collaboration between the two. Like they do this, they do Hand That Changed Its Mind together, and then Dr. John does vocals for Dr. Jazz with Jules Holland on keyboards. I think it'd be so cool. Yeah. A great combo.
So I've picked one, but while you're talking, first thing hits my mind, Don't Dream It's Over.
Really? That's interesting.
I that's not my pick, but while you were talking, like my mind went right to that, and I'm thinking, oh my gosh, that would be really cool to hear him do.
That would be really cool. Yeah. So Somebody should do an entire album of covers of Don't Dream It's Over, because how many great different styles you could put that song
into. I'd like to hear Megadeth cover it.
Yeah, right. Yeah. I would. I'm not even joking. Yeah. I would totally love to hear that.
So my pick, though, again, I went with an old standard and something we've talked about on other shows. I went with Summertime. This nice. This is a perfect fit for him. I want to hear a deep bluesy southern, jazzy, funky cover of it with him kind of almost not growling, but drawling his way through it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Really leaning into the southern.
I think that'd be great. That's a really good one too. And he could totally do that with, you know, just him and piano.
Mm-hmm. I actually Googled to make sure he hadn't, and I couldn't find any record of him having done it. Now, if he has, I couldn't find it. So I'm pleading ignorance if there's one out there.
I'm going to say that, you know, that I will accept that. And if it comes out later that he did it, I believe you, Hammond, that you did not know. You've done that. All right, let's get to our next segment, which is the playlist segment, which is where we talk about what songs we really enjoyed from our listen through. And all these songs, by the way, we try to stay away from greatest hits.
Yeah, I missed songs. It. I missed it. I added a couple. Sorry.
Did you? Well, you didn't put Right Place, Wrong Time. So, which is, you know what I love about that song is the opening, that I love that. I kind of want to turn that into my ringtone for a little while.
Yeah, that'd be good. Totally, yeah. That. Or just for a couple of people who you feel like you're in the right place at the wrong time.
Jeez. Yeah. Right. Only people when they call me like, oh, right place, wrong time. All right. First song on the list comes from the Gumbo album. I should have the list of the albums in front of me because the full name is Dr. John's Gumbo. It is a song called Junko Park. Now, again, this is a cover. It's got some Cajun origins, and I don't know the exact origins of the song, but I do like his take on it, and I do like the Clash's version of the song. Like, those would be a great back-to-back cover pair to play because they're so different, but one slides right into the other. It's really, really cool. Second one comes from Decisively Bonnaroo, which is Can't Get Enough. Uh, you go. Like, if you're looking for all the ingredients to make a Dr. John song, this song has all of them. It's a perfect blues rocker. And what's cool about it is, as I was playing and listening and working on stuff, I just started singing along with this song, and I'd never heard it before. It just, whatever it is about it that's infectious and totally pulls you in, I just started singing along.
Now, is this the one that Depeche Mode covered later?
Yeah. just can't get enough. That's exactly right. The next one is a song called She's Just a Square. This one comes from the Zuzu Man album. Catch my breath, just look at you. You're such a dread, just a square. You know you ain't no way. Got such an unusual voice, but for whatever reason, this is like so infectious and feels like a Brill Building song. Like this could have been a 60s instrumental rock hit. The next one comes from his Sentimental Mood album, probably the most greatest hitsy of all the songs that I've picked, but it's the cover he did of Makin' Whoopee that he did with Ricky Lee Jones. Another groom, another sunny honeymoon, another season, and that's the reason for making whoopee. Love is shoes. Talk about two unique voices. I mean, you know, you hear either one of these two people and you know exactly who you're hearing. I just can't help but love this song so much. And there's so many covers of Makin' Whoopee out there that follow the same like da-da-da-da, da-da-da-da, da-da-da-da. But they take the melodies into totally different directions, which is so freaking refreshing to hear. Like they don't just do the same standard Michael Bublé. It's been suspected, Makin' Whoopee kind of thing. Cover.
Hang on, before you jump in, are you sure that this is his biggest dabble toward a greatest hit? Because I feel like the next song you're about to talk about is actually one of those legendary hit songs. It doesn't have a hymn. It's just, it's one of those. Yeah.
Well, this is a hit without a doubt, but not a hit for him.
Yeah. Okay.
As a matter of fact, and it's, here's what's cool about, all right, I'll tell you, it's Layla. By Eric Clapton. Now, you got the specific version you've got to go to is the version on Eric Clapton's double disc set, Gut Bucket Blues, a live album. Mm-hmm. And Dr. John is a guest on this track, on a few tracks on this album. And you've got the original, the original Derek and the Dominoes version of Layla. And then you've got the really slowed down Layla that Eric Clapton did for Unplugged. I thought I'd heard all the different variations that Eric Clapton could do of Layla. This one totally blows them out of the water. It has become my preferred way to hear the song Layla performed by Eric Clapton. The guitar, it's almost got like a, it's got kind of a backbeat. Ding, 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 ding. It's so cool. I mean, I guess you're going to play it right here, but this is the version of Layla that I want to hear for the rest of my life. And Dr. John, you don't get any of his vocals until like the very, very end. I think he's on backing vocals and stuff, but I'm guessing that he's more there providing keyboard work. It's just so good. This is the one to get. And then finally, because I can't believe I've got a sixth one this week, but I was looking through the five, and when I heard this one, I'm like, I can't take any of those five off. This one came kind of late. It was as I was assembling some other things for the show. I'm like, I forgot he did this. It's a cover of the song Cruella de Vil from 101 Dalmatians. And there was a cover tribute album called 101 Unleashed. Unleashed, get it? Because they're dogs, they have leashes. But it's a
I'm not sure if I'm laughing because I just got it or if because your delivery of it. I don't know.
My slathering on the nudge. No, Cruella De Vil. Better beware. She's like a spider waiting for the kill. Look out for Cruella De Vil. At first you think Cruella is a devil, but after time is worn away the shock. You come to boy, you hear this song and you wonder how anyone ever did this song before Dr. John, because his vocal style fits that like evil, slimy, well, maybe not slimy, but you know, like that kind of like sneaky, backstabby kind of sound to it. It's so great. His vocals on this is just so good. And there's my six.
I'm glad you had six. I'm proud of you.
I don't often have six.
Well, I'm going to pull the curtain back. Doing the show notes and listening to this week was hard because, one, I was sick as a dog, and two, I was knee deep in, trying to figure out how to do work for another show.
Sure.
And things just got way out of hand, and getting sick did not help. So I was glad that you put the extra effort in, because I didn't.
Oh, well, you put in a lot of effort for the show, and you may like zip through some of the songs, but you still listen to them. And you know what? Yeah. I commend you for that. This was a big catalog to listen to.
Yeah, it was talk about the wrong place, right time. This was the wrong week. It was the wrong week for us to do this.
Yeah. With all the stuff, the other things that were going for sure.
So my first one was Walking on Gilded Splinters from the Grigri album's first album. Afraid of no tomcat, fill my brains with poison. Walk through the fire, fly through the smoke. See my enemy at the end of their rope. Walk on pins and needles, see what they can do. This is got a really haunting sound, and really, really leans into that whole mystery of the bayou and voodoo stuff. And it's got this really kind of very reverb-y approach to it that kind of leaves you in this kind of haunted space. It's really cool. The next one I picked was Season of the Witch. Now, we've made fun of Blues Brothers 2000, and I have seen Blues Brothers 2000 a couple of times. It's not a great movie. But the music from it is
more than
awesome.
Once you sat through that thing?
Yeah, oh yeah. Because the music from it is really, really good. Like if you just listen to the soundtrack, don't watch the film, but just listen to the soundtrack, it is a totally different experience.
All right.
And with Season of the Witch, I feel like when people are making fun of the blues or kind of making generalities about it, this is the kind of song that they're making the generalities about. So many different people. And I think the Blues Brothers are actually playing backup on this one for him. So not so, the traditionals, but the,
John Goodman.
Goodman. Yes.
Uh-huh. Yes. Yeah. Right. On harmonica. Yeah. Great. Classic Donovan track that they covered for that.
And then, another kind of walk on greatest hits is the Everybody Want to Get Rich, the Right Way. Great song. I understand why it was.
everyone want to get rich at Rite Aid.
That could be an advertising campaign that he could lean into.
It could be Popeyes and Rite Aid.
Because CVS just won't cut it.
Right. Yes, exactly.
But it's a great song. I understand why it makes the list, you know, why it was in the charts for a while. It's catchy. It's fun. It's a little bit cheeky. It's great.
Yeah.
Then I picked his anthem, the Angola anthem, which is his epic. Your hands bleeding. And your back is aching. And your head is bleeding. In a free man hollow. How? It runs, let me see, let me find out exactly what it runs.
Oh, now I understand why you liked it. It's a Dream Theater length song.
It runs like 17 minutes or something like that. It tells the whole story of Angola. It is his epic. It's his odyssey.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's really worth investing the time because it's such a good depiction, and it puts you musically and kind of emotionally in that place that you don't want to be in. Mm-hmm. And then I picked Babylon. From his second album?
I could pull it up.
Yes, really second album.
Okay.
And the reason I picked it is because it does kind of stand out as being more psychedelia influenced than any of his other. That takes the lead in the influences. And it kind of makes a different statement from his other stuff. Lots of his other stuff feels kind of fun and kind of mysterious, or feels kind of influenced by the city of New Orleans. This feels like it's something completely different.
Very cool. Well, good. Yeah, this was more fun than I was expecting. I do like his music, and I like what we did with it this week. You know, mm-hmm. I mean, it was an introduction to a guy who I really only knew like one or two songs by before. Are you there,
Hammond? Yeah, I'm here. I was just listening. Oh, okay. I was listening to the beautiful, sweet tones of Brian Ibbett.
I was like, crap, we disconnected. very cool. Well, all right. That is it for this episode. Next week, this feels like Brian's season because it's like all my favorite bands. You know, Paul Carrick we had. I guess we had Squeeze a couple seasons ago. He sparks last season. All right. Well, this is another one of my favorites. The Beautiful South, a band that came from Brighton in the UK. And I have been such a big Beautiful South fan. Big Beautiful South, that we're going from the south of the US to the south of the UK.
Didn't we cover one of their albums for the You Gotta Listen to This?
No, I don't know if we did.
I thought we did. What was the one that you made us listen to?
I made you listen to Figures on a Beach, Standing on Ceremony. Oh,
okay. Never mind. I'll cut all that out.
That's all right. No, you can leave that in
okay. If
you want. Yeah, totally. This one was a close second, though, or one of their albums would have been a close second. The album Choke is just, for me, just such a great album. So that would have been one where it'd been like, all right, yeah, I'm going to make you listen to Choke. Well, now guess what? I'm going to make you listen to Choke. And it's no choke. Oh, geez, that was a horrible joke. Anyway. We love getting your feedback, unless it's about that joke I just made. Email us, soundographypodcast@gmail.com. You can follow us on Twitter @TheSoundography. We say a lot of fun things there, and we let you know when new shows are up. Of course, you can subscribe to those new shows on iTunes, or just go to soundography.com, point your RSS feed reader to that. You can check out our playlists. We put those up for every show that we do. We give you a playlist, a Spotify playlist, so you can listen to the songs we recommend. You'll find links to buy songs on that same show notes page, like Amazon. It redirects you to Amazon. We're going to have that anthology that we talked about a minute ago is going to be the one we recommend. Support the show at Patreon. Listen, it takes, you know, we put in a lot of time, a lot of hours and stuff. And this isn't like a make you feel guilty thing. It's a, hey, if you enjoy what we do, consider throwing us a buck or two every month. You probably won't notice that dollar or two is gone, but we'll absolutely notice that you're giving it to us. And maybe there's a better way I could phrase that. We'll absolutely notice that your generosity and if everybody were to do that, it would make such a massive difference in the way we're able to put the show together and other things that we can kind of give up to focus more on the show. How's that? Of course, leave us a review wherever you get your podcasts, iTunes, Stitcher, wherever you go. And we love to hear it. We love to get your feedback. We love to know what you love about the show and what you don't like about the show. And we're here. We're listening. So tell us. That is it. On behalf of Hammond Chamberlain, this is Brandon Mitt saying that is going to do it today for Soundography. We'll see you next time right here.
This show is part of the Frog Pants Network. Get more at frogpants.com.